Welcome to True Romance. My name's Carolina Barlow, and my co-star is...
Daven Leary.
Daven Leary. Gosh, we just want to let you know that we had already recorded an intro episode last week for this Thursday's episode, and it was very sad, it was very depressing. Devin and I had both just watched the debates. Despondent is a word I would use to describe myself. Physically nauseous is an apt description for how I felt. I felt nauseous, like I was going to throw up. Devin and I happened to be in a work argument the same day as the debates, and it was just the worst 2 hours I've had in a really long time, and that says a lot because we are currently in lockdown in a pandemic. And then, let's just say the tides turned.
The tides took a turn for the mythic.
Very well put. I won't say better. I won't say worse. I will say if this were a novel and if this were a TV show, which it is, the plot thickened and the most unexpected thing happened and the most expected thing happened.
I was in bed at 1 something in the morning and my boyfriend turned to me and said, I just saw Trump tweeted that he's been diagnosed with COVID-19. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Am I in a dream? Because usually my dreams are a little bit more boring than this. Usually my dreams are, I forgot my lines in a play. Basic stuff.
I have to throw a party and it starts right now. Devin and I were texting. My sister was asleep. My mom texted me from the other room. That's how urgent it was. And then it was sort of like we were, Devin and I and all of our friends were 13 and someone had gotten their period for a first time.
I didn't have an open dialogue about menstruation until I was like 23 years old. So not really.
Okay. Well, it was sort of like we were all celebrating a huge milestone that was going to come to pass at some point. I will tell you, there's a lot of very straight and narrow people in the Democratic Party saying that we're bad if we feel any sort of delight over this diagnosis. Listen, good for you. As for me, after 4 years, and I'll say 5 to include 2015, of watching someone display racism, sexism, hubris, be a noted rapist, and face zero consequences for all of that behavior, on top of being, by the way, completely incompetent and stupid. But with seeing someone get a consequence for an action is, I mean, I don't remember what a bump of cocaine feels like, but I sort of do, you know?
I'm going to bring it back to relationships because I'm a professional and this podcast is about relationships. As someone whose biggest struggle in relationships has been my obsession with wanting to be right and wanting to get the other person, the justice feeling of getting the other person to realize, like that feeling when, I'll use this example, a previous ex, whenever we would drive in the car, he would let the gas go down to empty. And I would say, can we pull over and get gas? Can we pull over and get gas? And he would say, it's fine. I can go a little longer. I can go a little longer. I was always like, that makes me really uncomfortable. I'm nervous. Can we just pull over and get gas? That's coming from me having OCD, but also the first car I ever had broke down all the time. So I'm very like...
Also logic.
It's logic, but... And yeah, I feel like that is a male thing of being like, we can push a little further. And I'm like, why? My primal primitive instincts are to caretake. So my sense is to be like, let's be safe. Let's do the right thing. The male sense is to be like, let's push it to the brim, which I've never wanted to do. Whatever. Sidetrack. One time this ex ran out of gas on the highway when I wasn't in the car. Called me. It's like, oh my God. Like I'm on the side of the road. The car ran out of gas. Of course I'm worried. Of course I'm like, let's call AAA. Let's get the AAA card out. But the other part of me is like, I fucking told you to your face so many fucking times. You talk down to me. You treat me like I'm crazy. You tell me that I'm wrong. And here you go. That is the feeling.
If you had zoomed close up on Devin's face in that moment, you would have seen the smallest uptick in the side of her mouth, very much like the Grinch when he realizes, yes, indeed, he can steal Christmas.
The point is that that's the feeling I had of like, you denied this virus, you piece of shit. All of the relatives and friends and whoever who've believed that train of thought of acting like the virus didn't exist, you're fucking wrong and you fucking know it now.
Listen, I had liberal white men telling me,
calm down.
Calm down. The flu kills 30,000 people a year. It's actually not that big of a deal. Making fun of me for not hugging them. And my corner of my mouth upticks too. And I also want to say this. A part of me is relieved that he has it because maybe his fucking insane followers will take a cue and they won't endanger nurses when they inevitably get it.
Yes.
I'm just happy that logic is being forced on these people. And in terms of a virus on the president, if it had to go that way, it had to go that way. Is it strange? Is it haunting, one would say, that the super spreader event happened to be at the Rose Garden Massacre, aka the Rose Garden ceremony, in celebration of Amy Coney Barrett's nomination to the Supreme Court, directly after Ruth Bader Ginsburg had given her dying wish, which was that no justice would be appointed until after the election. Some would say that you should never go against a woman's dying wish, and that if you did, if you believe in the afterlife, that she may be around to make things right, to deliver justice, some would say. Devin, give me your take on it.
That's haunting. I'll say that's haunting. And to me, haunting is synonymous with exciting, because not only do I think it's exciting if a place is haunted or if a house is haunted or if there's a ghost, obviously that's exciting. If you think that that's anything other than cool, ghosts exist, there's more than just, you know, everyday life, then that's weird. Separate podcast discussion. But what
separate podcast in general,
separate entire realm, genre of existence. But what I think is just as haunting and exciting about this is that if this works out, I'm not going to say if Melania and Trump die, because I don't want to, you know, deal with like whatever, but I'm not going to say that I don't feel that way. I'm not going to say I do feel that way. Whatever happens. But if this causes the delay of the Supreme Court, is it called a hearing? Induction of her?
Proceedings?
If this delays the proceedings to bring Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court, all I have to say is elves are real. That's what I'm excited about, because we all know that recordings came out the day that Trump announced that he had it, which was a crazy day for so many reasons. So many fucked up things happened. Insane day. Tapes were released of Melania saying she doesn't care about Christmas.
Oh, who gives a fuck about Christmas decorations?
That is what she said.
The first person I thought of was you.
As many people know, I separately from Christ and religion, I love Christmas. Christmas means everything to me. Festivity means everything to me. I love Christmas decorations.
Decorations?
I actually, green and red is my favorite color combo, and I love that color combo, and I wish that I could like somehow like incorporate that into my life more, because it's hard to find green and red things.
My first thought was, I can't believe Melania is doing this to Devin, and it felt almost geared towards you. But as you put it, you know, you don't want to upset Santa's little helpers.
Who gives a fuck about Christmas decorations? So yeah, so she said she hates Christmas decorations, and then she comes down with COVID, and then the empire takes a hit. For the first time, again, we've seen this guy do everything with no repercussions. Like, I've just sat there like, this is going to be the thing. This is going to be the thing. This is going to be the thing. People are going to say he sucks. People are going to realize. People are going to change. Nope.
I mean, remember Robert Mueller?
Remember Mueller.
You're holding on to him for dear life.
Remember anything. Remember whatever inspired the Showtime TV show Comey Rule that is the most boring thing I've ever watched, and I actually had to tune out and watch something else on my laptop. Sorry. But yet, they finally get a hit to the Empire, and it's right after they disgrace Christmas. I want to say that I think elves did this, and I'm grateful to them, and
we're grateful to the elf community.
I am confused why they haven't done anything about literally anything else that's ever happened.
But we don't want to go down that road.
But it's too hard to go down that road. So we're just going to say this was a Christmas miracle. Hey, how about a reboot of Miracle on 34th Street? A second reboot, but it's Miracle on Pennsylvania Avenue. Oh, drum roll, please.
I do know that in the completely made up war against Christmas that Trump has been touting his victory, quote unquote, on, we know that the sleeper cell has been inside the house. It's been Melania who's been trying to take down Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Her decorations already were a disgrace, but I was like, at least
blood
she tried.
Blood red trees. Oh, that brings me to my last point, and then we do need to get to some readers' questions.
Yes.
As soon as I saw Melania's redesign of Jackie O's Rose Garden, and I swear to you when I say this, I looked to my mom and I said, you should not do that. You do not mess with a deceased woman's plants.
Yeah.
This is an institution. You don't mess with that. There's juju all over that. There's bad juju all over that.
Yes.
You don't mess with Jackie O, with JFK. You don't touch that stuff, and you don't make it ugly. Oh my God. I mean, haunted. And we wish the best to the White House staff and any nurse who has to be put in harm's way because of the selfishness of these people.
To Claudia Conway.
15-year-old hero who was able, who was braver than some 5-star generals in Washington by confronting her mom and taking her out of that administration.
And I just want to say, speaking of first ladies, if you've seen on CNN the commercial for the miniseries about first ladies that uses Confident by Demi Lovato as the song for the trailer, really poor choice for that subject matter, in my opinion, having What's Wrong with Being Confident over videos of Jackie O and Hillary Clinton and Nancy Reagan is honestly strange. But we have seen all the updates with Max Eric and Demi Lovato. We get all the messages. We really appreciate them. We did see that he posted a picture of himself crying today. We did see the video of himself talking about
being a pawn by the media and being clickbait, even though he really isn't clickbait to any but us.
I mean, it's just what's
the country's moving on.
I saw a blind item that said that, like, it wasn't an arrangement. She just, like, saw the truth, and everyone is, like, grateful that she saw the truth. So I agree with you now, finally. I don't think it was an arrangement. I think that they were together, and then she realized he's a psychopath. And, or not a psychopath, but just like a piece of shit. I won't even give him as much credit as like a Dahmer.
He's a social climber.
I just want to say, like, I can see through fake crying as a fake crier myself. And just don't insult us. We can see it's fake. We can see that you just pinched your cheeks to make your face red and then irritated your eyes a little bit and then made it look like you're crying in a picture.
Once my college boyfriend read a poem to his dad on his birthday and I fake cried. And while fake crying, I thought, this sucks.
So, yeah, we just wanted to say we see all this stuff and we'll keep watching. Also, again, please don't insult Pete Davidson by comparing yourself to him.
That was psychotic. I was like, you stand with Pete? Pete doesn't even know who you are.
Pete will never utter your name or hear your name ever.
I don't know her.
Pete would say, I don't know her.
We need to get to some readers' questions. It's an emergency.
We love our reader questions so much. Thank you for writing into trueromancepod@gmail.com. That's trueromancepod@gmail.com. Thank you.
I mean, that was amazing. You said you've been having spelling problems recently, and that was elegant. I was following every letter.
I have layers. I can both have spelling errors and be perfect at spelling. That's just how I am.
We received an email from someone I will call Miranda.
Nice.
Miranda says, "Your podcast came at the most opportune time." I completely agree. "I was mutually/not mutually broken up with in July, and boy, do I still have mixed feelings about it. At the time, I wished my ex all the best, and I understood why he broke up with me and moved back home. Fast forward, however, and I find myself mostly okay with bouts of crying, but at times I feel anger and I don't know why. I guess maybe it's because I see him living his life perfectly happy without me, and I feel like the only one still upset over it. I'm going to seek therapy to talk to a professional about it, but I'd like to know your thoughts and if you've had feelings of anger after a breakup, even when the relationship was good/healthy. First of all, shout out to someone writing in and also saying they're going to seek therapy. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love how in my lifetime, therapy has been completely destigmatized. It's almost like if you're not going to therapy, there's confusion.
Yeah, that's weird.
I really think that we don't know how the other person's doing. Men especially. Women have so much more experience being honest about their feelings, about their struggles, because that's been labeled as feminine, where men aren't as encouraged to openly process things. So I think it's hard when you look at pictures or you hear hearsay about how an ex is doing because they sound fine. And I'll also say that I actively work to be okay. And if one of my exes saw that, they would think, oh, she's doing fine. But people like Devin or my family or or anyone who listens to this podcast knows that's not generally the truth. So I think we have to stop assuming how people feel and also stop expecting them to process things a certain way or on our timeline. You know, it takes a really long time to sort things out. And sometimes that's on a delay. So I process things usually in the moment when it's happening, but I know a lot of people who don't, and that's totally fine. So we don't know how your ex is feeling. Anger to me is hard in a relationship. I am usually waiting for apologies that aren't going to come. There's a quote that I love, which is, "It's hard to accept an apology you never got." So I have to work to find my own closure. As Pat, our friend on a previous episode, said, it's not the other person's responsibility to give me closure. I have to find it for myself. And under that anger is usually a lot of love. I'm angry because this thing I loved was broken. Speaking of the social media angle of it, though, and watching someone's pictures and thinking they're doing great, Devin and I have openly talked about how much we hate pictures of people hysterically laughing.
Yes.
And I'm like, no, you're not. Like, what are you laughing at?
And how did the person get the picture? That's what I always wonder. Like, how did they get a picture of themselves laughing out loud? Like, someone just took that picture. About social media, going off that, I have depression and panic attack, just panic disorder, I guess, constant panic attacks, whatever that's called. And I also have a social media addiction. So I have been in bouts of depression where I'm having like debilitating panic attacks and I have to like go in the bathroom at work for like an hour because I can't slow my heart rate down. And at the same time, like later that day, we'll post a like TBT, I love this trip I went on with, like, because I think it's better now, but I have been like very addicted to social media and validation on Instagram. So in those moments, I always think like, oh yeah, you truly cannot tell at all. Also, I mean, meaning you can't tell at all how someone's really feeling from their Instagram, because as Carolina was saying, like, you know,
I've curated myself to look okay.
Yeah. And also, I've been in relationships that are struggling on the rocks, fighting all the time. And then I had like the desperate moment to post something to try to make it look like we're doing okay. So I remember that moment and people saying like, oh, when you posted those pictures from your vacation, though, it looked like you were so happy. And I was like, oh, my God, like this is the toxicity of social media, because that's not true at all. I took that picture and then like an hour later we were scream, cry, fighting.
So you don't know.
You don't know. Another thing that I think is helpful is I called Carolina like right after this one breakup I went through. And I was like, I remember saying, I just hope he's okay. I just hope he's okay. I just want him to be okay. I'm just worried. And she told me, I think once you realize he is okay, you'll get angry, because that's what happened for me. And do you remember saying that?
Not really, but it sounds wise.
It was so wise, because at the time I was like, I don't even know what she's talking about, whatever, on to the next thing, blasting Ellie Goulding in the car, sobbing. Then months later, I got some form of what I thought was proof that this person was okay, and I did get angry, because I was like, wait, but I'm actually not really okay, and I'm like struggling a lot in therapy to try to get through this, and I'm still recovering from it, and this person seems like they're doing great, and it didn't affect them at all. Like, that's so unfair. When in reality, I had no contact with the person. I have no idea what they were going through. They have no idea what I'm going through. And also, during that same breakup, the person said that I seemed like I was fine. Like, he was like, why aren't you crying? You seem like you're totally fine. So I'm just saying, I think that when we're struggling with this kind of loss and pain, we try to have an ally in our feelings. Like, during the breakup, he wanted me to be as in the same exact emotional state as him so he would feel less alone.
Yes.
So he misinterpreted me not being visibly as upset as I didn't care as much. And then when I thought he seemed like he was doing really well, based on evidence that I pulled together, not on reality, I wanted an ally in my pain. I wanted someone to say like, no, I'm just as fucked up as you are about this, so it's okay. So I think that that's a normal instinct to have. But in reality, the other person cannot be the thing that makes you feel okay. So you have to, as this listener is doing, become okay on your own through therapy and whatever it is.
Through therapy, there's so much help out there. I think that therapy can be expensive. The Loveland Foundation is a really cool outlet. And I've read online about Black women and brown women finding so much relief there. One woman tweeted that it literally saved her life. So shout out to Rachel Cargill for creating such an amazing foundation. There's also self-help books that have really helped me. Specifically, another shout out to the book Attached, which I just can't recommend enough, all about our attachment styles and what they'll tell us. And again, it's so nice to read listeners' letters. I was going to bed the other night in a bad mood, reading emails, and just, you know, I completely agree with what Devin said. We are worried about the other person because we don't want to feel alone in these feelings. But then look around you. You're not alone in these feelings.
Right.
So look, that's very encouraging.
Every now and then I get a little bit terrified. And then oh, no, that's turn around, not look around. Sorry.
I was waiting. I was like, not sure what the song is. Gonna let her hit another verse.
Bright eyes, every now and then I fall apart, and I need you now tonight.
I fucking need you more than ever.
Okay, great. We have to take a quick ad break. We'll be right back with more True Romance.
I want True Romance.
Welcome back to True Romance. Let's get to the topic for today. Am I right?
You're so right, Devin. Today we're going to be talking about the TV shows Devin and I grew up on, the shows that taught us what love is, what it's supposed to be. I think I speak for Devin and myself when I say television is one of the loves of my life. It really is. My parents tried to make intellectuals of me by refusing to get us a TV from ages, I want to say 6 to 12. In those years, I became very much even more of an indoor kid. I was reading all the time. I hated the sun as I do now. I was waiting for that TV to hit, just like a drug addict is waiting for their first hit of marijuana to then translate to cocaine, to then translate to an opioid addiction. I was just waiting for one TV show. We would rent TVs This was a time when you rented. It was before the age of streaming. So we were renting TVs to watch.
Renting a TV like unit?
Yeah. We would go to a nearby electronics store, rent a TV, and then we would watch like the finale of Friends.
What?
I know. Or the Oscars or something like that. And when that TV had to go the next day, whew, emotions brewed. So it really backfired, though, on them, because when they got a TV, that TV turned on and it never turned off. I was fucking there. I'd come home every day at 4 p.m. I would watch Oprah at 7 p.m. I would watch Friends.
I feel bad for you because TV was my life. We had a TV in almost every room. My whole family was like addicted to TV. I actually babysat for this family that didn't have a TV. And the first time I babysat for them, I remember thinking, so what would we do? That, like, I was like, okay, so what activities? And they were like, well, we go for walks outside. And I was like, all right.
To find a TV?
I'm like, what time are your parents coming back?
You guys are just watching TV through strangers' windows.
They said that they had like a little VCR that they would play old I Love Lucy's on. So we did set that up. And I was like, okay.
My mom took me to the Radio and TV Museum in New York. And I watched old I Love Lucy episodes. And that is a very good memory in my life. Because again, no TV. I was like, ooh, an old I Love Lucy episode. Maybe an old Gilligan's Island episode. What a fun day. Well, a real escape.
Also, my mom tried to like put rules around the TV. Like we couldn't watch TV during homework hours, obviously. And we couldn't. I don't even remember what the restrictions. I blacked out the restrictions because they were so traumatizing to me. But I remember at one point she was like, OK, so we're not going to watch TV on weeknights anymore. And like, obviously, uproar, riot. And then, but she was like, okay, aside from American Idol, because we all love American Idol, obviously we have to watch American Idol. Then a little show called The OC comes out and we're like, okay, this is, my mom's like, this show is pretty good. We're going to watch just American Idol and The OC. Okay, that's fine. Then a little show called Lost comes out and she's like, all right, okay, so we're going to watch just no TV during the week aside from American Idol, Lost, and The OC. By the way, remember, if you will, that American Idol was two nights a week. So basically, we were watching TV every night of the week by that point.
I remember the first season of American Idol, and I remember walking into my mom's bedroom. The TV was on, and I looked at the TV screen and said, who's that? Who's that girl singing Respect? Yep. And it was a little girl named Kelly Clarkson, the loudest highlight stripes you ever did see in her hair. And she was so incredible. And I voted for the first time for nominee Kelly Clarkson.
Mm-hmm.
And it was incredible. And I'm so glad she won.
I am so glad she won. That was one of the only moments of
justice
in our society was when she won. But also, I had a SAT tutor that I just want to say was on American Idol. And he was one of the people that they play in the montage of like the worst people. He sang an Akon song. He was like a nerdy white guy. My friend Allie and I in high school were like, this guy is weird. There's something weird about him. So I Googled him on the old desktop one night and I found this video of him on YouTube and it was like montage, like American Idol fails. And it was him singing an Akon song, this like nerdy white guy. And then I had to go back to SAT tutoring and just like sit across from him. And I couldn't, you know, when you're like contorting your face to not laugh.
I think the answer is A.
And he was like, what Akon. The fuck? I think the answer is Akon. And he was like, okay.
I hooked up with a guy in high school who was later in the top 20 on American Idol. I can't say his
first
name.
First and last name.
I can't say his name. I will say
Justin Guarini. Greens?
I fucking wish.
No, don't wish. Oh, Constantine Marulos.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, that's him.
Okay.
I remember two of my guy friends, though, just unashamedly passing videos of him back and forth on Facebook, making fun of him. So, yes, I've hooked up with a celebrity, you can say. I want to first discuss the show The OC.
Okay.
It's a very amazing show. It's a very particular show. Let's talk about Marissa Coop. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Marissa Cooper, who her best friend Summer calls her Coop sometimes, and it's so forced. And Marissa calls her best friend Summer sometimes, and that's forced as well. I'm like, there was no chemistry between Misha Barton and Rachel Bilson, because Misha Barton, I want to say, was just out of her mind on painkillers while shooting this show. She just is deep voice like Ryan.
I know.
Completely just, there's paper. No sense of humor about this girl.
Her personality is a piece of Xerox paper.
I felt bad because she was so thin, and we all figured it was naturally at the time. And obviously she was, it was not. And she also was just playing this alcoholic weirdo on the show. I mean, if you picture her not 90 pounds, not model gorgeous, and she's just a normal girl behaving this way, you're like, just check her into rehab. She's unwell. She's also playing a 16-year-old dating another 16-year-old, Ben McKenzie, who was shooting the show while he was actively 33.
And to be honest, looked like he was actively 45, first of all. Second of all, was not hot. Always was the problem to me. I was like, wait, this is supposed to be the attractive one. I don't find him attractive whatsoever.
I thought he was so hot. We are all Seth Cohen girls, yes. Obviously.
Yes. But also, let me say this. Misha Barton, I hated her on the show. I didn't have any feelings whatsoever about her. I was like, okay, sad. Her life seems sad, but I'm not even going to waste time thinking about it. No offense. Till last year, The Hills reboot, MTV. Inexplicably, 100% inexplicably, and remains never explained, she shows up in The Hills reboot as their friend, Misha Barton. They're like, so we have this friend, Misha, and I'm like, okay, a early aughts icon, but I loved her on The Hills reboot. She looks amazing. She seems like she's doing really well. She's kind. She's compassionate. She's kind of weird. I like that about her. She confronts Perez Hilton.
The best moment
scene.
Of the show.
So that's what I want to say about that.
No, I do feel for her. I think that she was the victim of early fame when she hadn't faced some demons, and yes. Nobody deserves that.
I would take that, but I wouldn't deserve it.
I think that this is really interesting. And I think it began around the early aughts, maybe even earlier than that, was this idea of sexualizing troubled women. So it made me want to be more complicated, which I ascribe to being more like darker, you yes. know, and there's this whole rescue fantasy. Ryan has to rescue Marissa
in Tijuana
multiple times. They actually had a specific music cue, which was amazing whenever Ryan was carrying Marissa, which he eventually does until her death from an exploding SUV. I really found their relationship had zero chemistry except for those moments.
Yes.
Because they were both completely lacked humor. The whole only humor in the show belonged to Seth Cohen, Sandy Cohen, and Rachel Bilson did her best, I will say. I also thought that relationship was completely skewed. It was like Rachel Bilson was funny, but Seth Cohen was the intellectual, constantly making fun of how materialistic his girlfriend was. Mm-hmm. And I just thought this relationship would be so much more interesting if that was flipped. Then one of my favorite parts in the first season of The OC, Marissa has a crush on Ryan, but she's dating that weird looking football player who has a middle hair part.
Who's like, welcome to the OC, bitch.
Yeah. Bitch. Best line of the show. Tattoo worthy, possibly. So she's constantly having this flirtation with Ryan, but she's with her boyfriend. Then one night, Ryan messes it up. He doesn't reciprocate her feelings in some way. And Marissa's a virgin. There's all this tension over the fact that she's a virgin. So she decides to go lose her virginity to her boyfriend that night. She drags him away from the party. And Ryan sees them leave and is like, oh my God, she's going to lose it to her shitty boyfriend. So they're neighbors, of course.
She's going to lose it.
She's going to fucking lose it.
She's going to lose her intact time into that shitty boyfriend. What a shame.
And therefore, her innocence, her integrity, and her value as a human being. So Ryan sees her going home that night. He rushes to her door. It's an emergency. Is she still a virgin or not? And she looks back at him and says, she just is grabbing her keys and she looks back at him and says, "You're too late." And it's so fucking depressing. And at the time, that's what we're taught as women, right? It's like, okay, you have to, like, she ruined herself. She self-harmed by losing her virginity. Instead of her being like, "Oh yeah, I actually just slept with my boyfriend. It felt kind of weird. I don't know who I have feelings with. I'm a little bit confused." And if he was a normal human, he'd be like, "Okay, whatever. Let's just talk about this later. Good night."
Right. Instead of being like, "I'm gone. Me that you knew is gone." And he's like, "Oh,
I'm a ruined woman. I fell. I ate that apple.
I caused all of the sin in humanity." Okay. I want to thank the OC for a few things. One is the storyline of Kirsten going to rehab and getting scammed by the lady at rehab, which was like my favorite storyline because she's
brilliant.
They just randomly start showing long close-ups of Kirsten's wine glasses. I remember my mom saying, "Oh God, they're building up a storyline that she's an alcoholic," because they started showing like slow close-ups of wine glasses. And it was like, wait, what are they doing here? And then suddenly they were like, "Kirsten's an alcoholic. You need help." So she went to rehab and she gets scammed by this woman, and I was obsessed with it. So first of all, thanks for that. Second of all, thank you for the Laguna Beach franchise, which was born out of the show The OC, because MTV was like, "Oh, I think people are actually interested in this place, The OC," which actually is like an incredibly boring, stupid, wealthy suburb
Republican,
that no one cares about.
Disgusting. Yeah.
Disgusting. And then I want to also thank them because out of Laguna Beach came not only The Hills, but also Real Housewives of OC. Out of Real Housewives of OC came every single Real Housewives franchise.
I had no idea that that was the genesis of so much good in our society.
Yes.
I cried at the end of, I want to say season two, when Ryan, ostensibly but not really, gets a girl pregnant from Chino, his hometown, of course, and has to leave the OC to go become a construction worker. And
Seth goes to Catalina.
There we go. Seth runs away to Catalina. The one-hit wonder Jem plays the song "Maybe I'm Amazed," covers the Wing song "Maybe I'm Amazed." I lose my fucking mind. I am crying at the TV. I go find my mom. I'm crying at her. That's very much a theme of my upbringing, is I took stories way too seriously and would cry about them later after the fact.
Yes.
So I was very upset. I watched the movie Titanic. I was upset for like 4 days. I don't like star-crossed lovers. It was never for me. I like justice. I like people ending up together. So yeah, we're very grateful for the OC. I, as an adult, as a 22-year-old woman, my friends and I started watching the OC as a gag. We started episode one. Cut to every weekend, we were like, "Do not watch the OC without me. We are going through the season. We are staying up until, I'm not kidding, 6 a.m. literally watching the sun come up, thinking that the OC was worth it. And a lot of the times it was. But you got to stop these shows on time. You can't let them ruin you with their last season. And that's exactly what the OC wanted us to do, was watch it after Misha Barton died. And we're just not supposed to do that.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with more breaking down of our favorite TV shows from growing up.
I want true romance.
And we're back with True Romance. Before we get to some more of our favorite formative TV shows of the aughts, we have to do a dramatic Instagram rating. This is a two-parter, folks. We are going to be celebrating the love of Justin Bieber and Hailey Baldwin. We're going to first discuss that with Justin's most recent IG celebrating his anniversary. Here we go. It's a very beautiful picture of them kissing at the end of their aisle. Hailey Bieber: I am so lucky to be your husband. You teach me so much every day and make me such a better man. I am committed for the rest of our lives to empower you to be the woman God has called you to be. My heart is to enable you to achieve all of your wildest dreams. I promise to always put you first, to lead with patience and kindness. Happy anniversary, my beautiful, sweet girl. All in all, pretty normal for him, I want to say. Devin, do you want to take away his engagement post from 2018?
Oh my God, it's actually 70 pages long. Okay, so this is from July 9th, 2018. A boy, were we different back then. We have aged. Listen,
we sure have.
I'm a different person now. I don't even know what I thought. I don't even know if I recognize these people, to be honest. Okay, Justin Bieber. I don't know why I said that. Obviously, it's him. Okay, sorry. I'm going to be natural. I'm going to be funny. I'm going to be normal. Okay. Was going to wait a while to say anything, but word travels fast. Listen plain and simple, Haley. I am so in love with everything about you. So committed to spending my life getting to know every single part of you, loving you patiently and kindly. Capital L and capital Y at the end of kindly. Probably a code. Let's look into it. I promise to lead our family with honor and integrity, letting Jesus, through his Holy Spirit, guide us in everything we do and every decision we make. My heart is completely and fully yours.
Do you hear that, Selena?
I will always put you first. You are the love of my life, Haley Baldwin, and I wouldn't want to spend it with anybody else. You make me so much better, and we complement each other so well! ! Can't wait for the best season of life yet! ! Interesting. Again, we should look that up. It's funny because now with you, everything seems to make sense. The thing I am most excited for is that my little brother and sister get to see another healthy, stable marriage and look for the same. Okay, that is cute.
That is sweet.
That is pulling at my heartstrings a little bit. God's timing really is literally perfect. Okay. We got engaged on the seventh day of the... Okay, this is giving me very Chloe and Lamar vibes. We got engaged on the seventh day of the seventh month. And the number seven is the number of spiritual perfection. It's true. Google it, all caps. Isn't that nuts? By the way, I didn't plan that. Anyways, my goodness, does feel good to have our future secured. We're going to be better at 70, baby. Here we go, all caps. Quote, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord, end quote. This is the year of favor, !
All completely normal. And I will say from that engagement post, we never thought they were going to last 2 years. So kudos to them. I will say that.
I always thought that this was some kind of like revenge to Selena thing.
Of course.
They have proven me wrong. They're doing pretty well, it seems.
They do seem very in love. I will say that.
I will say that too.
Let's discuss our next TV show, which is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. I will go to bat for this TV show forever. It is called Friday Night Lights. If you have not had the pleasure, I'm excited for you.
It's such a good binge.
I was in a artsy fartsy college. All of my friends, none of whom had probably ever watched a full football game, were passing around DVDs to this show, Friday Night Lights, and saying, you have to watch this TV show. And I said, I'm not interested in any of those things. No, thank you. And then I watched episode one, ended with tears, was excited for episode two. Another show that I would watch when I had to go start work at 7 a.m., I would watch it till 5 a.m. and get 2 hours of sleep, and it was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I will talk initially about the character of Tim Riggins, which I think is the most urgent to discuss. He is too hot for the USA, maybe even for Europe. He is a fluke. He's a freak of nature. He's so hot, it would distract me during the day, probably because I was on 2 hours of sleep also.
I want to say that I rewatched the first two episodes of this show that I've already seen many times last night, and everyone is so hot. But wait, I just want to say that I have like a really good Tim Riggins story.
Oh, please.
So I have a note in my phone, in my notes app, that says Tim Riggins in all caps. The reason I have that note in my phone is because one night after work, we had like a work party. Everyone from my office was there. We decided to go to a bar afterwards, kind of like an after party. So it's 2 to 3 a.m. in Midtown Manhattan. We go to a random bar that literally no one cares about. Like, it's not like it's like a hot thing. Like, no one goes out in Midtown. No offense if you do, but like, it's not like there was a celebrity hotspot club there. It was just a random bar that we decided to go to at 2 or 3 in the morning on a weeknight. We walk into the bar. It's empty. aside from Taylor Kitsch, the actor who plays Tim Riggins, sitting there with a friend in the bar.
Oh my
but
God.
But this is the frustration of being a sober person. Everyone else was wasted because it was the after party. So I'm like, hello, anyone. Tim Riggins is here. Everyone's like, haha, what shots? Yeah, they have tacos here. And I'm like, no. Pay attention, Tim Riggins is here. And no one was listening to me. So finally I write it in my phone, in my notes app.
Just
and
to
I
tell someone.
Showing it to people and no one's listening. And finally I see him leave. I'm like, okay, no one cared about that. Then
That's
the
so
next
painful.
Day I saw that one of my coworkers did post a picture with him. And I was like, okay, so you did know he was there, but like that was so crazy. Why was he there at 2 a.m. on a weeknight with a friend? He didn't seem drunk, by the way. He seemed really nice and like completely fine. So I don't really know what was happening, but it was crazy.
He is upsettingly hot. And Minka Kelly, who was one of his love interests on the show, is also someone that the Russians designed to distract us from them taking over our election. I really think it's very special. I found so many dynamics on this show interesting. And just like Justin Bieber and Hailey Baldwin, I think that Coach Taylor and Tammy Taylor are an example for our children on what a stable marriage looks like.
Yes.
So the BTS, meaning behind the scenes, sorry, someone's been in Hollywood too long, behind this relationship is that when Kyle Chandler and Connie Britton met, the actors who play Coach and Tammy, they had immediate chemistry. Connie Britton said they both talked and immediately had the characters down. They were on the same page. She said, this relationship, I want to be stable. I want them to have each other's back through everything. And he said, I think the exact same thing. They decided to go on a road trip together before shooting even started to bond. The creator of the show was like, I was so nervous. They're both married people. I didn't want any drama on set. But they seriously just believed in this relationship on the TV show so much. At one point, because the ratings were really bad for this show, it was constantly being threatened to take off the air. In fact, at one point, it was going to be canceled. And fans were so committed, they sent light bulbs for yes. Friday Night Lights to the NBC. Besides that point, writers at one point, they said that they wanted there to be a cheating storyline. And both Kyle Chandler and Connie Britton threatened to quit the show. They were like, we are not going to cheat on each other. That's not what these characters would ever do. And I just found that really moving. And I found it their relationship is the heart of the show. A lot of relationships on the show were really complicated. There was a murder storyline that completely didn't work that they were obviously using for ratings, which I won't even get into. But besides that, I mean, Smash Williams dates a girl who's bipolar and decides to go off her meds. And we go back and forth with that. She's not stigmatized at all. It's more Smash trying to do what's best for her. Mm-hmm. And he tells her, yeah, I am scared. I'm scared that you're going to hurt yourself. And it's a really beautiful scene. One thing that I found very moving, and this is very controversial, and it's not a spoiler because it pretty much happens in the first 3 episodes. The pilot, Jason Street, the star quarterback, is paralyzed in a game. And this actually happened in real life. And the creator of the show was at a game that it happened at. And he was so affected by it that he knew he had to put it in the show. So again, the show has a storyline that completely represents the disabled community, which I think is amazing. Mm-hmm. And Minka Kelly, Lila Garrity, is Jason Street's girlfriend. And after the accident, she is ruthlessly optimistic, just keeps saying, you're going to walk again. It's going to be okay. Don't even worry about it. We are going to get you there. And the doctors are even upset because they're like, his injury is very serious. There is a 5% chance he'll ever walk again. And he's upset because he's like, Lila, listen to me. I will never walk again. You have to accept that. And yeah. She can't. At the same time, Tim Riggins won't even visit his best friend in the hospital because he feels so guilty. So there's a lot of messed up stuff going on. Finally, the night that Jason Street yells at his girlfriend, Lila, being like, you'll never walk again. Lila leaves. She screams at Tim Riggins, like, you'll never visit him. What kind of friend are you? She's hitting him over and over again. And then they make out. Ridiculous. So while her boyfriend's paralyzed in the hospital, newly paralyzed in the hospital, she's making out with his best friend. And it's horrible. It's the most horrific thing to happen. But at the same time, When someone interviewed Taylor Kitsch, the actor who plays Tim Riggins, about it, he said, when something traumatizing happens, people do not know how to react and they seek solace wherever they can. And so I thought it was a really brave storyline in that you could completely villainize these characters, but Lila Garrity really did love Jason Street. And then after the fact, after Jason finds out that she cheated on him, he is mad at her, but he eventually proposes to her. And later on in the episode, when he's sort of having his cheating storyline, he's talking to this tattooed bartender, tattoo artist about her. And the tattooed girl's like, why did you propose? And he was like, I was losing so much. I didn't want to lose something else. And she was like, well, I hear that. And then they make out. And you're obviously rooting for it because he has been scorned as well. And but these are all so deep, so complicated, so human. I mean, it really makes you more compassionate, right? And that's what the best stories are supposed to do, is give you compassion for others rather than just villainize them.
The last time I watched the show was probably when I was around 22 years old. So, I mean, 30 years ago. No, I'm kidding. So like 6 years ago. At the time, my friend Scott Herkman was also watching it, and he does the best impression of Matt Saracen ever. So I remember even then when I watched it, I was so enraged at Lila. Like, I remember thinking, like, it's kind of like a hot dynamic between her and Tim Riggins, but at the same time, I was just like, how could she do this? Whatever. This time watching it, it made so much more sense to me. Like, these are kids in high school, and this is such a traumatizing, earth-shaking thing that it actually does make perfect sense. I think it would have been weird and kind of like a misrepresentation if they had it be that she was just like this perfect girlfriend and she always was there at the hospital and she's always doing all the right things and it's all fine. So I actually really noticed that more this time, that it was glaring how much she was trying to avoid reality and be like, it's all good, it's all good, it's all good. And also it makes sense that she would have this storyline, because of course, like, they're trying to deal with such a serious thing at such a young age. But I do have to say that, and by the way, yeah, it's way ahead of its time with representation of disabilities that now is becoming more normalized, but it wasn't at all back then. But I do have to say that the dialogue between Jason and Lila in the pilot is truly
bizarre,
insane. Like, their first conversation is her being like, are you gonna like get a touchdown, Jason Street? Yes, Lila Garrity.
Then you must kiss me.
Then you must kiss me. Are you in love with Lila Garrity? Then you must kiss me. It's horrendous. Then their second conversation, they're at like this pep rally thing, and she gets upset because Tyra was in a pic, like flirting with him and in a picture with him, which, by the way, at this age and previously, love Tyra, stan Tyra. She's amazing. But Lila gets jealous, and Jason Street says to her, Hillary, I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
I think that's funny.
What? Okay, first of all, it's a misquote, because he didn't say that to Hillary. He said it to the world. I did not have sexual... I don't imagine that that was his conversation with Hillary, first of all. Second of all, to immediately bring up the Monica Lewinsky scandal to your significant other when they say that they're jealous about something you did is jarring.
That's only 10 years after the fact. Very topical.
Anyway,
that's when the pilot was probably written. Well, there's one thing that I do sometimes when I'm bored, which is I watch YouTube videos of montages of Lila Garrity and Tim Riggins over songs. You know how some fans make those YouTube videos of like top five Lila and Tim kisses, and it's playing like
basically under a porn
Snow Patrol song. It's basically porn, and I'll just calmly watch it.
It's better that to me than porn, because it's like these people are not, you know, being objectified and whatever.
Yeah, and I don't have
Rashida Jones's Hot Girls Wanted looming over my head when I watch montages of Lila and Tim. I have just, you know, nice, warm Bath and Body Works smells in my mind.
The sneaker upper in Friday Night Lights is Landry, sweet Jesse Plemons. Would we have ever suspected that sweet Landry was going to be in every single Best Picture nominee for like the next 5 years after the show?
We never would have thunk it.
We never would have thunk it.
Do you think Saracen hates him now? He's like somewhere.
Of course. Actually, I heard they're really good friends.
Oh, cute.
I also think it's really cute that Jesse is with Kirsten, Kiki D, Kirsten Dunst from Bring It On. Amazing.
Such a hot relationship. I saw them at a restaurant once. I just have to say, such a hot relationship.
Such a hot relationship. Just full of talent, brimming with talent. Before we go to our next show, I want to talk about one of my favorite romantic storylines on Friday Night Lights, which is after Lila has gone through this traumatic thing, she's been slut-shamed by a whole school for cheating on her paralyzed boyfriend. Mm-hmm. She has a Christian phase in season two. She becomes a born-again Christian. She dates the actor who will become Logan on Gilmore Girls. So Blondie with highlights. She dates him. He's the son of a celebrity preacher. I don't know.
He was the son of a preacher, man.
He is a part of what is now Hillsong. So him and Lila are dating, and we don't see them break up explicitly, but she goes and visits him at his parents' house, and they're making out, and things are obviously getting heated, and he pushes her away and is like, "You're tempting me right now, and I need to protect your dignity." Something to that effect. And we watch her as he leaves the room, and it's just so clear that she's like, "I'm too horny for Jesus. Like, I'm too horny to like keep on this track." And she doesn't. I mean, Tim Riggins is in the state. She's not going to waste too much time.
I know. You really wouldn't choose Jesus. You really wouldn't choose Jesus over Tim Riggins. Nor would you choose Jesus over Tim Riggins, but definitely not
Jesus. Nor would I choose Jesus over Jesus, which is now what I'm going to call Tim Riggins.
Jesus, the Lord and Savior of Jizz, is Tim Riggins.
Speaking of Jesus, our next show, we're just going to quickly go over, is Gossip Girl. Now, I believe that Gossip Girl was another show birthed out of the success of The O.C. because it's basically The O.C. in New York. Secondly,
although it was based on a book series that I did read.
It was based on a book series, and I read about 7 books of the Gossip Girl book series. It was in the aughts, which were a time when as the youths were really worshiping wealth, it was a time when all these there was VH1 shows explicitly just about how much money celebrities spend.
Lifestyles of the Rich and the Famous.
Thank you. And we were enamored with this completely disgusting, over-the-top, gratuitous, ostentatious wealth, which was born out of capitalism. And so the Gossip Girl books were very much about that, how rich and beautiful Serena Vanderwoodson was, Blair Waldorf. There was a specific scene I'll always remember in the book where Blair Waldorf is in Greece, and they were like, Blair was in her Calypso silk dress, and she walked into the ocean. Oh, well, it's completely ruined. And I was like, wait, why was it necessary to talk about how rich she was that she just ruined a perfectly silk dress from an expensive brand? But that was a part of the romanticism of the show. Anyway, translate that to a TV show. We meet Blake Lively, Serena Vanderwoodson, very akin to Misha Barton in that she has never told a joke in her life. Mm-hmm. And also Nate, Chase Crawford, who went a little overboard with the eyebrows. That's all I'll say. He's a little groomed for my taste.
Yes. I have to say I'm happy for Chase Crawford because he has gotten a comeback on the show The Boys on Amazon that is very good and highly recommend. And he's really funny.
I did not know this.
I didn't either. I was like shocked to see him in it. And he's really funny and really good in it. So I'm happy for him.
Okay, well, congrats to him and to his family. I will say the smartest thing this show did, which was not in the books, was Blair hooking up with Chuck. And the most iconic scene is Blair in a fight with Nate, doing a terrible burlesque performance. Chuck is like, oh my God, who is that girl up there? When really she's just in a slip and her headband sort of like swaying her hips to some music. They get into the back of Chuck's limo and she loses her virginity to him. And he's like, are you sure? And she's like, yes. And I will say that was a scene that was formative in my sexual awakening as a 14-year-old girl. When I say sexual awakening, I'm saying that loosely.
It sounds like you moved to the Haight-Ashbury district and took LSD with strangers.
That was in the 60s in my group love years.
It's actually interesting that you say that because I distinctly remember Serena multiple times in the show being like, I love the 60s. I wish I was born in the 60s. I meant to be in the 60s. And I don't remember which of my friends pointed this out, but someone was like, why would you want to live in the 60s? That was like one of the most contentious, horrible times in American history. The Vietnam War was happening, but in the show, she's like, it's just because I'm a free spirit. Like, I want to live at a time when there was horrible injustice and
the worst
death of a million people and, you know, draft and horrible, horrible civil rights violations. But she was like, that's just me. I'm free spirit. I want to go live in the 60s. I also will never be able to go to the meatpacking district in Manhattan without hearing in my head, guess who's macking in the meatpacking? And it was
Kristen Bell.
Yeah. And it was Dan and Serena.
It's so funny that Dan was pitched as like the intellectual of the show. They're like, he's Red Catcher in the Rye. Okay.
I know. They're like, can you believe this loser is hanging out with these people? He's a conventionally very good looking person.
He lives in a insanely expensive loft downtown.
And they're like, ew,
you pauper. I also love the storyline of Dan's dad and Serena's mom having this torn love affair from when they were kids. And at one point they're about to get together and Serena confronts her mom and says that Dan and I need a chance, so you can't date his dad. And I was like, wait, because you want to have a high school boyfriend, you're gonna ask your mom not to be with the man she loves?
Right.
I also was like, who cares? In my free love years and my group love years, I was like, why aren't they able to date?
Marriage is a construct.
We're all a part of a big human family. So we have to move on. We can't spend too much time on Gossip Girl.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about a little show called Lizzie McGuire.
Go on.
Very experimental. A cartoon character and a real life character live in the same universe. Another show where Lizzie McGuire was presented as a huge nerd when really she had every fashion piece as a 13-year-old girl I wanted. Her hair was crimped, which was, you know, the look. And she was best friends with a guy, which I perceived as the height of success, being a guy's girl, which I later learned was a construct of the patriarchy, me thinking that if a guy wanted to be friends with me, then I had a legitimate personality. I will say this. And I'm speaking of Lizzie McGuire, but it applies to obviously many shows, and it's a part of what makes a successful sitcom, which is the will they or won't they. Lizzie and Gordo, what's going to happen there? I was such a fan of this show that years later, when I was 15, I was in London, in the tour for that huge Ferris wheel in London, I see Gordo. He's tall, he's blonde, but he's the same old guy. My sister says, stop staring, stop staring, stop staring at Gordo. How could I look away?
Right. How could she challenge you to look away from that?
So I didn't look away and then he left.
Listen, I really appreciate how this show formulated who I am. It really, the exploration of eating disorders when Miranda faints during the practice of their choreographed dance. Amazing.
Also, when Miranda complains about looking fat and Lizzie says, why don't you just wear all black? And I'm like, Lizzie,
forgot about that.
She's like, hey, you look great, but why don't you wear all black? Black slimming. If someone say that to me when I complained about feeling like I'd gained weight, I would put them down.
I would euthanize them. Just kidding. I don't support that at all. I don't support the death penalty at all. Okay. I loved how they explored these important issues. I loved the classic popular girl is evil dynamic. I loved...
What is that one line the popular girl has? Where'd you get that top, Lizzie? Hugeloser.com.
Hugeloser.com. Yeah, and then didn't she do like a cheer at school that was like, U-G-L-Y, you ain't got no alibi. And she was talking about Lizzie.
So mean. But we also have to remember the pilot episode where Lizzie is an amazing ribbon dancer.
Oh my God. Rhythmic gymnastics.
Yes, rhythmic gymnastics. And at the end, after she wins like the blue ribbon or whatever, she tells her parents, like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want rhythmic gymnastics to become who I am.
Right. Which, speak for yourself, I definitely want rhythmic gymnastics to become who I am. And I have always wanted to be a gymnast. That being said, my parents did put me in gymnastics classes. I couldn't pay attention. I did cartwheels on the corner and I failed every time. And then I didn't keep trying. But I would love to be a rhythmic gymnast.
I grew at a terrifying rate as a young child. And so in gymnastics class, I had a little bit of the body of a giant baby in my leotard, as no boobs, no butt, but nice belly. And I was with these tiny girls. My friends were just rocking and rolling, hopping up on that beam. And I was like, oh boy.
Oh, yikes.
A little hard to get up here.
But you know what? I'm glad Lizzie didn't end up in the horrible world of gymnastics, because it's a dark place.
I want to say something about TV shows having the will they or won't they storyline. And I'm speaking about Pam and
Jim.
I'm speaking about Gordo and Lizzie. I'm speaking about Zooey Deschanel and Jake Johnson on New Girl. If it was me, these will they or won't they storylines would not last more than a few episodes. Because in real life, I'm friends with Gordo. I'm Lizzie. I tell Gordo within the first week of hanging out, like,
yes,
what are we? Do you like me or not?
I have a crush on you. I like you. Do you like me back? Yes, no. Check yes or check no.
I don't have the time to waste more energy on it. And that's just been the story of my dating history.
Yes.
I remember one of my boyfriends who I really did love when I was like 22. We hadn't really hung out that much before. We'd hung out a little bit. And I was at an ASAP Rocky concert with him. And we just looked at each other and I just whispered in his ear, I like you. And that was where our relationship was born. And it was literally just like a feeling. I barely knew him. And it was helped by the fact that he was extremely attractive. I will say that. But I'm very much that brand of human. I would hang out with my high school friends for like a week over winter break and then be like, okay, so are we going to date or what? Because I'm in love with you.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how you last seasons on a show without at least attempting a move.
That being said, I didn't have a single high school romance to really relate to anything. So, most of what I felt at the time of watching all these shows was a lot of rage, because I felt like, must be nice. Oh, Lizzie, must be nice. You have a crush on someone, but someone else has a crush on you. Must be nice. Oh, Serena, must be nice. So that tells you what kind of bitter, angry cloud of darkness I was as a child, and not much has changed. But I did love these shows. I love Lizzie. I love Hey Now, This Is What Dreams Are Made Of. I love Isabella.
Any storyline where there's a secret twin makes me happy and excited.
Yes.
Let's end with what storyline on a TV show we identify with.
Okay, well, you go first, because as I just said, I did not have a lot of high school excitement to relate to, but you go ahead.
I do not identify with most of these shows. I do identify with Phoebe from Friends. And even as a young girl, I think I was 11 when I started watching that show, I knew that I was a Phoebe. I knew I wasn't Jennifer Aniston burned to me. I knew I wasn't Courtney Cox. I'm just not that organized. I knew that I was Lisa Kudrow, Phoebe, humble brag, because she's not dating that much. She's kind of in on the joke of herself, but not really. You know, I knew that people laughed at me a lot and I wasn't sure exactly why, but I also tried to be funny. And she, fashion-wise, the most creative and experimental. And I liked that her storylines weren't about romance a lot. They were about something really weird she did. And during one episode, she wins $2,700 and keeps on trying to repay the favor to the universe. And so she lets a bee sting her as one of the... Sorry, we can take all that out.
No, I like that.
These TV shows have meant a lot to me. There's so many more that have comfort in my heart, and I still go to the television to provide balm in these crazy times.
I relate most to the woman who scammed Kirsten at rehab because I do often go to rehabs in order to scam older white women. So I guess that's pretty directly related to my experience. And I want to say that I am going to rewatch every single one of these shows that we've talked about. I'm probably going to start with Friday Night Lights because it's what's queued up on my Hulu right now.
I need to find some more Even Stevens episodes because that was really the forefront of my creative influences when I realized I wanted to get into comedy. This is what funny is.
I can never watch Even Stevens again after seeing Honey Boy because I have such a dark association with it now. That I loved that movie, but it just like now I can never look at Even Stevens the same. And that's what art does. It changes your perspective.
And this episode is really about art.
Yeah. And also, I do want to say that I loved Beans from Even Stevens.
Beans. I love the episode of Even Stevens when Shia LaBeouf crawls into a huge vat of chili with all of his best friends.
Right. Great prop comedy.
I think that's where we should end it on, is the vision of Shia LaBeouf crawling into a pot of chili.
Yum.
Devin, I love you.
Love you, Carol. Clear eyes, full hearts. Can't lose.
Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. Catch you next time on True Romance.